Hi, this is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking with W. Michael Farmer about his book, Night of the Tiger, The Betrayals of Henry Fountain, and his other award-winning Western historical fiction. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Tracy. It's a pleasure to hear from you.
And you too. It was a pleasure to read your books, Night of the Tiger, Legends of the Desert, Book 3, and Blood of the Devil. I was fascinated by the story of Pancho Villa and his buddies that you have created.
I'm delighted that you are. The storyline, though, is actually pretty close to the history that I think a lot of folks just aren't familiar with.
I think you're right. Why don't you give us a little synopsis of Night of the Tiger, the New Mexico Arizona Award winner?
The protagonist in the story is a young man who knew Pancho Villa in his when he was a teenager. That is, the young man was a teenager. The book itself is the third in a trilogy, and it begins when the young man has gotten out of medical school in 1915. He had been friends with Pancho, as I say, in his younger days. Pancho has been taking a real beating from the Civil War with Venustiano Carranza, and is literally backed up against the U.S. border by Carranza's general named Obregon. And is trying to buy arms and get out of Chihuahua over across the Sierra Madre to the little town of Agua Prieta, which is just across the border from Douglas, Arizona. And so he sends word to his friend who is named Henry Grace. To come see him while he's camped close to the border. Long story short, he asks Henry to bring a reporter that has been covering him in the Revolution to see him take Agua Prieta in the expectation that he'll be able to convince the President of the United States that he really needs to be the man who runs Mexico. First chief, if you will. And so Henry comes through and brings the reporter to the camp. The reporter agrees to meet Villa at Agua Prieta. And Villa pulls off something that is really phenomenal. Even his enemies give him a big thumbs up, because he manages to get about 10,000 men across the Sierra Madre into the Bavispe Valley and up across and around to Agua Prieta. However, the United States, via President Wilson, has decided to recognize Carranza, and let Carranza send a large number of soldiers up across the United States and back into Mexico, it's really a betrayal by the United States, because it's supposed to be a strictly neutral country. Wilson also sent a regiment of soldiers to Douglas and basically to warn Villa that he shouldn't shoot into Douglas, and if he did, that the army would come after him. Villa has basically run out of supplies. He had little or none when he left to go over the mountains. The fact that all of these soldiers are there and they have dug a ditch all the way around Aquafieta for the soldiers to stand in, put barbed wire around it, and they're just hunkered in there, and he's not going to be able to take the city when he badly needs supplies. And so he goes on to, after attempting once and just seeing his men slaughtered as they try to run at this trench that's filled with rifles and machine guns and even some artillery, he goes on to Naco, tries to regroup, gets carried down to Hermosillo, and again has not learned the lessons they should have learned even over on the Chihuahua side when he was fighting Obregón directly, and basically loses his entire army. He had started out with more than 20,000 men in Chihuahua, and has to march back across the Sierra Madre, and on the way, a small village thinks that his men are bandits, and ambushes some and kills a couple. And Villa, who is already nearly crazy with anger, executes everyone in that village who is a male over 12 years of age. And the hero who has been warned not to stay with Villa because he's kind of slid off of the edge, tries to stop him. Villa thinks it's an insult and orders him killed. He manages to avoid that, but swears vengeance and comes back to Mexico after Villa has attacked Columbus. And the story revolves around the idea that Henry Grace will take vengeance against Villa, justifiably so, but in order to do that, he winds up having to betray a young man, and he has dreams about something that's trying to warn him about what he should and should not do. And eventually he finds Villa, who in fact was suffering badly from a leg wound, and eventually reconciles himself to the fact that he really doesn't need to kill Villa as part of his revenge, if you will. Eventually gets back home and is a better person for not having killed Villa in the first place.
Now, how much of this is true? I know I was fascinated by your representation of Villa, and it really goes into how he kind of gets a little crazy toward the end. He's a very mixed character between good and bad.
Yeah, well, that's what makes a good three-dimensional character, isn't it?
Right.
The problem was that Villa had come out of the revolution a major hero. Everybody loved him except the people that wanted to take over politically, Carranza and others. And eventually, Villa and Carranza started a civil war about who should be the first chief of Mexico. And as a result, Villa, who had just overweening confidence in everything that he did, could have trapped Obregón at on the Gulf Coast. My aged mind has gone blank about the name of the town, but and taken all the supplies, which was a huge amount, that the United States had left when they had invaded and then gone back home. But he didn't. He didn't follow the advice of Angelus. And Obregon managed to abscond with all of his equipment. He went to a little town down in the valley and just sat there and waited on Villa. And he had studied Villa's tactics during the Revolution. And he had also had German advisors who had taught him trench warfare. And the little town that he went to was covered over with irrigation ditches, which were a natural way to fight. And Villa, they had two major battles there, and Villa just could not get it in his head that he could not attack a trench filled with machine guns and rifles with horse cavalry and men on foot running along behind him. He got beat up there. They fought as they went south from the little town, and the equipment had come from Veracruz. Mm-hmm. The United States was there. And Obregon just tore him to pieces. Mm-hmm. And so when the novel begins, Villa is kind of up in the southern part of Chihuahua trying to decide what to do. He just cannot wrap his mind around the idea that you can't charge guns like that. And he makes the same mistake over and over and over. But he's such a charismatic figure that people still flock to him, although they are fast learning that he just can't get away from the idea of what he says will absolutely come true. And so he, you know, it's the worst kind of narcissism, where a general responsible for the lives of men can't get his mind around the fact that his tactics are just out of sync with the times. And as a result, he winds up, I think you had it exactly right, he kind of loses his mind. And it takes a good while for him to really get it back. I kind of followed, after the book was done, I did quite a bit more research, and eventually gets his mind back, but by that time it's too late for him to do anything to become a political power and kind of punch, I can imagine. But it just fascinates me to look at a character like that, and you can see so many analogies in modern times, both generals and political figures.
But it's very readable. I mean, it reads like a story, even though there's so much history in there. Now, one thing I wondered was, Quentin Peach, the reporter, is he a true figure?
No, he's not. He was a character in another book that I've written. That the version of that is it came out last year. It's called Blood Soaked Earth, and he was a character that first appeared in the trial of Oliver Lee for the murder of the Fountains, Albert and Henry. Are you familiar with that story?
I'm not familiar with that one, no.
Yeah. Fountain was a big-time Republican. And he was butting heads with a big-time Democrat named Albert Fall, who was later to become a Republican and the only man to really serve any time in the Teapot Dome scandal.
Mm.
He was the Secretary of Interior for Warren Harding. But be that as it may, there was a fountain in his little boy, Henry, who it turns out is the Henry Grace in this Night of the Tiger novel.
Right.
Were attacked and apparently murdered, and Oliver Lee and some of his men were blamed for it. They had a trial in the little town of Hillsboro, which is about 100 miles north of El Paso, close to the Rio Grande. Fountain was such a famous personality throughout Mexico and a lot of the Southwest. It was called the Trial of the Century. The Hillsboro was chosen as the site of the trial because it had a great big brand new courthouse, and it was a neutral site. And Tom Catron, who was the big man for the Santa Fe Ring, he basically led it, offered to prosecute the trial for $1. And the trial lasted 18 days, called something like 75 witnesses, ended close to midnight. The judge said, I want the jury to go back and get some rest and start first thing in the morning. And Albert Fall jumped up and said, no, we've had enough of this. We want you to start tonight. And so the judge ordered them to do that. And in less than 10 minutes, they came back and said not guilty. And so Quentin Peach was a young reporter from San Francisco who had been sent there to cover the quote-unquote trial of the century, which several papers were calling it. And they had run telegraph wires and what have you. It was also the first trial that the man who bought the El Paso Herald attended. And Peach was a reporter that... he wound up hiring away from San Francisco. I use that character because Villa was remarkably astute in getting his story out to the papers to get support, and so I used Peach as a representative of that to show that. That Pacho was really knowledgeable in what he was trying to do, even though his understanding of his military situation sometimes was just out in left field.
Right, but yet he was very intelligent and knew how to use the media at the time.
It's kind of remarkable when you think about it.
And our other character in there is Yellow Boy, who was in the other book.
I have been accused in other interviews of being like a Western Isaac Asimov because I've written six novels which all have Yellow Boy in them.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the novels are use him as the protagonist, but he first appeared in the first novel of the Night of the Tiger series. It's called Mariana's Night, and it also won a New Mexico Arizona Book Award. And it tells the story of what happened to Albert Fountain's little boy, who managed to who in the story was not. Killed and managed to escape to take revenge on the man who had killed his father. And the way that I saved him was Yellow Boy happened to be passing by, saw what happened, and admired the courage of the little boy getting away from the men who had murdered his father and knew he would die if he didn't get him to some place where he wouldn't freeze to death. And so that character appeared, and after I finished The Night of the Tiger, I decided that and circumstances dictated that maybe I ought to do a book that would use a Yellow Boy character to tell the historical story of what happened to the Mescaleros from about 1865 to about 1920. So that's why he's there. He was the mentor for the little boy Henry, grew to the man that was in Night of the Tiger.
So you've been a historian for just a little while. Your career and your doctorate was not in history, right?
No, it was not. I was I have a degree, a PhD in physics.
Right.
And I really consider myself probably more an engineer than I do a physicist, but I had developed laser-based instruments to measure atmospheric aerosols. I've done quite a bit of atmospheric research. That was one reason why I wound up living at Las Cruces. For about 15 years and doing contract work at White Sands for the atmospheric sciences lab.
Well, this is certainly a far cry from physics, atmospheric research, clearly researched deeply for the history.
Well, you know, I really had not intended to write novels, but I had finished a book that, or actually a couple of books called The Atmospheric Filter. After I finished that book, I was kind of at a loss about what to do. And when I lived in Las Cruces, I had heard the fountain story and had actually read about it in a book by Leon Metz, which was the definitive biography for Pat Garrett. And I was really curious about who really might have killed the fountains, because Dr. Sonnigsen had written a book called Tularosa. It said Metz was convinced that Oliver Lee had in fact killed the fountain. Sonnigsen came back and said, well, not so fast, and here's the reasons. And so, you know, I'd read both books, and I really thought maybe if I sat down and just wrote a story. Oakley Hall, who I think is arguably one of the best novelists of the 20th century, had said that the business of fiction is to find the truth, not the facts. And I paraphrase there, but that was his philosophy. And I thought, well, if I can get to the emotional truth of it by writing fiction, maybe I'll understand who was responsible for the fountain murders. And I really didn't intend to write a novel, maybe a long short story. And that only for my own benefit. And after I got to writing, I needed to answer some questions about it. And I'm sure you, with your background, you fully understand that the more you research, the more you and write, the more you have to research.
It's true.
So, instead of writing a little 10,000 word story, when I got through, I had about 150,000. And in order to get it published, I had to cut about 30,000 words out of it. And but at the same time, I think I got a pretty good insight into what was going on in those days.
Yeah,
and,
And you kept writing.
I was off to the races.
You were.
Yeah, I kept writing.
You did. So you have six now, and you have more coming, right?
Well, actually, I've got seven.
Oh, okay.
There were the three mountain books, of which Night of the Tiger is the third. There were three books about Yellow Boy.
Right.
And then there was a fourth book about the trial, which is called Blood Soaked Earth.
Okay.
And in order to establish a reader base, I've written little 1,000 to 1,500 word essays that go on a Facebook page I have called Killer of Witches, which is the title of the first Yellow Boy book. And I was religious in putting these things out once a week. And I was able to gather those essays into a coherent block, and they got published as a book of historical essays, not fiction, called Apacheria 2 years ago. It also won the New Mexico Arizona Book Award for history, and was named Book of the Year for New Mexico.
Congratulations on that! Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. And more recently, I got very interested in Geronimo because he appeared briefly in Blood of the Devil, which I think I sent you a copy of.
Right.
He appeared briefly there, and I kind of got interested in what happened to him after he kind of disappeared from the scene. You know, he surrendered in 1886. It's really a fascinating story about what happened to him after he was made a prisoner of war. I have a book of those essays just about Geronimo that's called Geronimo, Prisoner of Lies, that came out last October. There's a novel that is coming out in May of this year called The Odyssey of Geronimo. It's kind of tries to put a little meat and sinew on the bones of the history behind what happened.
Put a little meat and sinew on the bones of history. You've really done that with these books. After this one's finished, will you then be writing another one?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I did both a history and a novel of what happened to Geronimo after he was captured. In reading what led up to his capture, really became apparent to me that this was very much an epic story in the same sense that the Iliad and the Odyssey were epic Greek stories. This is an epic American story, and so I've written a novel called the Iliad of Geronimo.
Oh, I like that.
Which I've sent to my publisher. I haven't heard back whether or not they want to publish it, but it begins with the one and only capture that happened to Geronimo in 1877. He surrendered in 1886, and so there's like a 10-year time span, which is about the length of time of the Iliad, of the Greek Iliad,
right?
And you will find some remarkable similarities between the Greek story and the story of what happened in those wars that he was involved in.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So I have a novel for that, and I've also got a little history book that gives the detailed history of those 10 years. So if things work out, I'll have an Iliad and an Odyssey of Geronimo.
And you have a website where they can find the books.
I do. Yeah, wmichaelfarmer.com.
And you have a Facebook page that they can go and read also.
Yeah, it's called The Killer of Witches.
Well, I really appreciate your writing, your research, and sharing with us today.
Well, thank you so much for your interest.
And that was Michael Farmer, writing as W. Michael Farmer, about his Western historical fiction, Night of the Tiger, The Betrayals of Henry Fountain. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners.